So in this beautiful text, the teacher has shown us two different paths before: the path of karma, the path of service, and the path of love or devotion. And he said both paths can lead us upward towards the spiritual goal. And then last week we had started the path of pranayama or breath control, the path of yoga where you do exercises and control your breath. And last week the teacher had told us that through control of the breath, you can control the mind, just as when you were observing your breath, temporarily your mind becomes quiet. Or when you do the proper pranayama or breathing exercises, your mind temporarily gets controlled like a bird in a net. But the bird stops fluttering when it's in a net or in the cage. But the moment you remove the net or the cage, the bird flies away. So the mind also, which has been controlled by breath, appears to be temporarily quiet and then gets reactive. So that's why when you do this yoga, when you come to the yoga class or when you are meditating and observing your breath, the mind temporarily gets quiet. And then the moment you wake up from your meditation, your mind is back into all the stress and all. So he's going to talk further about the breath control, how breath helps to control the mind, and what is meant by mind control. So we'll try to cover two verses today. Verse number 12, page 40.
Chitta-vayava-shchit-kriya-yutah. Chitta-vayava-shchit-kriya-yutah. Shakha-yordvai-shakti-mulaka.
So Chitta and Vayu. Chitta is the mind and Vayu is the breath. So the breath has activity and the mind has thinking. So these are two activities. So the one is the breath, you breathe, and another one is mind. So the breath has activity and the mind has thinking capacity, but they are connected. Shakha yordvai, but they are like two branches of a tree. Shakti mulaka, and the root is the shakti, the creative power of the Lord called Maya. So the mind and the breath are like two branches of a tree, and the root is the creative power called Maya, which nourishes them both. Because we know it is the Lord that created everything. It is his creative power, which we call as Maya, which created this entire universe, all the trees, plants, birds, animals. So even I, my body, mind, intellect, my, you know, the objects, emotions, thoughts in the world were all created by the Lord. And my capacity to breathe and my capacity to think, obviously, I got from the Lord. So it is his creative power which creates both and also nourishes it. Because even when I'm asleep, my breath keeps on moving. You know, I keep on breathing even when I'm in deep sleep. When I'm in a dream, even though I'm not aware, but my mind is working, it's creating its own fanciful world in the dream. So the breath and the mind continue to be active even when I'm in deep sleep, which means that there is a power called the Lord which is nourishing and supporting both. Now they say that there are three aspects of Maya, the creative power of the Lord. The Lord created this universe, and there are three aspects. In the Gita, they are called Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Some of you are familiar with these terms. Sattva is the thinking capacity, the ability to think, the knowledge aspect of creation. Because creation needs knowledge, needs activity, and then also needs rest. So all three are like when I'm working in the world, I need the ability to work. When I go out on a job, I need the ability to work. So I need rajas. Then I also need to think, because if I mindlessly am working, then my work won't be successful. But at the end of the day, when I'm tired, I worked all day, then I need tamas. I need sleep to rest or rejuvenate to start my next day's activity. That's why if you don't get a good night's sleep, then you say, oh, I'm tired. I didn't sleep good last night. I was under so much stress, or I had some problem, or I was not well. And then if you have not slept good, then obviously the other two don't work. You can't work very well. You can't think. So this Maya or creative power of the Lord works through three gunas or three aspects called Sattva, which is the thinking, Rajas, which is creative, and Tamas, which is ignorance and sleep. And so the mind aspect is Sattva, is the subtle aspect, and the breath is the activity, the active aspect. Because the breath moves and the mind thinks. And the breath not only moves itself, but it makes the rest of the body move. Because if there is no breath coming, if there's no oxygen coming, then the brain can only survive 4 minutes. And after the 4 minutes, the person dies. Say if you're underwater or if you stop breathing, if you have a heart attack. So the breath is required for life. And so the mind is also nourished by the breath, which is again is nourished by the creative power. Talking about mind being nourished by breath reminds me of a story. There was this man who was very depressed. He said, life is not worth living. You know, I've had too many problems, too much stress. I'm going to commit suicide. So in the afternoon, he leaves a note on the kitchen table. You know, life, I'm unhappy, I'm miserable, and I'm committing suicide, but it's nobody's fault. I don't want anybody to blame themselves. It's my own fault. And so I don't want anybody to feel guilty. And so he writes this big note, leaves it on the kitchen table, goes in his room and locks the door. And so in a couple of hours, people come home and they see the note. Oh gosh, what happened? This poor guy, what happened to him? Why was he so depressed? Where is he? So they go to his room and the door is locked. And they bang on the door and he doesn't answer. You know, they say, oh gosh, I hope, you know, what did he do? Did he take pills or shoot himself? What happened? They keep banging and there's no answer. Nobody opens the door. The door is locked from inside. Finally, they 3-4 of them push and they break the door. And they go in there and he's hanging from the ceiling. You know, there is a hook and he's hung a rope. And he's hanging from the ceiling and the rope is around his waist. So they say, what happened to you? He said, I am depressed. I'm going to commit suicide. I'm going to kill myself. He said, yeah, but you have the rope around your waist. Aren't you supposed to put it around your neck? He said, yeah, I did it, but the damn thing was choking me. In Punjabi, it sounds better. Sorry, da gala ghut reha si. So the breath is required for nourishment, for life. So how does breath control the mind? So they say control the subtle by the gross. Because the mind is often not under our control, but the breath we can control through observing the breath or through taking deep breaths and pausing or, you know, learning proper pranayama from a teacher, you can control the breath. So the gross, the breath, which is part of it, which is between the body and the mind, between the gross body and the mind, is the breath, which is the physiological functions. You know, the breath is one of the physiological functions. There's digestion, absorption, circulation, breathing. We had discussed that last time. So the body is under my control. I can control my hands, my legs. The breath to some extent is under my control, but the mind is not. So using the breath, I can control the mind. It is like I see a tree full of apples. Now, I'm not that tall. In the tall branch, it's loaded with apples, but I can't reach it. So, but there is a branch closer to me, which I can reach, which has no apples on it. So what I do, I jump and catch that branch and I pull it. As I pull this branch, the other branch, which is connected, comes down, and then I can pull the apples, or I can ask somebody else, okay, now the branch is low, you can pull. So what is available to me, I can use that to get what is further away. So the breath is available to me. And so using the breath, I can control the mind. That's why we always say, you know, observe your breath or do some simple breathing exercises before meditation, because that is a very good way to control the mind. So that's why he says, Shakti Moolaka because they, why are they connected? Because they are both nourished by one root, just as there are two branches of a tree. And if there is a common root, the root that is nourishing both, then the two branches are connected. So that's why the breath and the mind are like two branches of a tree. So that is this verse. So that's why he says, use the breath to control the mind. Now, what do you mean by control the mind? There is are two states of controlling. One is the mind is absorbed, and the second is the mind is destroyed. And the question is, which one is better? Is it better to absorb the mind or better to destroy the mind? What do you think? Which one is better? That's what most people think. So let us see how what the verse says. Most people think absorbed mind is better than a destroyed mind. You don't want to destroy the mind, right? Otherwise, if my mind is destroyed, I can't think, I can't go to work, I can't even do the dishes. No, that's not what we mean by destroyed mind. So we'll talk about that. That's the next verse says, two states of mind. Verse number 13.
Laya vinashane ubhaya rodhane. Laya gatam punar bhavati no mritam. Punar bhavati no mritam.
If you can't chant, don't worry about it. It's just a pleasant chanting, so I do it as long as you understand the meaning. So the chanting is not important. You have to get the meaning of the mind. So laya and vinasha. So laya is absorption. Vinasha is destruction. Ubhaya rodhane. By controlling both, by controlling the breath and by controlling the mind, these things can happen. You can either get absorption of the mind or you can get destruction of the mind. And what happens? Laya gatam punar bhavati. But having gone into absorption, the mind comes back. As we said, like the bird caught in the net, the moment you release the net, the bird flies around, or the moment you open the cage. So the mind which is in absorption can come back, but the mind which is destroyed, no mritam, the one that is destroyed, does not come back. So what do we mean by absorbed mind and what do we mean by destroyed mind? Our mind has two aspects. There are two aspects of the mind. One is called the functional mind and one is called the judgmental mind. The functional mind is what we use. You know, I get up in the morning, I brush my teeth, I make my breakfast, take a shower, you know, do whatever I have to do. So that is the functional mind, which helps me to drive, helps me to calculate, operate a computer, watch TV. Now that mind does not get destroyed. And that is the mind we need. You know, you need that mind because that is the mind that studies. That is the mind that learns. That is the mind that functions in the world. So that mind does not get destroyed and is necessary for functioning, except somebody who's had a stroke or is in a coma. But for most of us, the functional mind always remains till death. But we have a second aspect of the mind called the judgmental mind. What is this judgmental mind which judges, which has likes and dislikes? I like this, I don't like this, I want this, I don't want this, he's my friend, she's my enemy, he belongs to my church, he belongs to my state, he belongs to my community, he belongs to my race, and so he is a good friend, another one is not. Or, you know, my neighbor just bought a new car. And he gets jealous. You know, I have this old Volkswagen I have been driving for 20 years and now he's driving in this brand new Mercedes. And then you get jealous, you know, you say, I wish I could also afford it. Even if I can't afford, I go and take a loan. You know, why? Because I want to compete, keep up with the Joneses. Or my friend, she bought a new diamond, you know, or her boyfriend got her a new diamond, 2 carats. And then I want my boyfriend also to, you know, get me. So that judgmental mind, which competes, which has likes and dislikes, which has jealousy, greed, because I don't have enough money, so I have to cheat or lie somehow to earn more money so I can buy the same diamond that my friend has. So it is the judgmental mind that is a problem. In our life, the functional mind does not create problems. You know, I mean, we all need to eat, drink, function. But the problem comes when this judgmental mind arises and starts functioning, and then I get under the control of this judgmental mind, and then I start judging people based on, oh, how big a house he has, how nice a car he drives, how, you know, what kind of job he has. The person may be dishonest, may be a crook and everything, but because he has a lot of money, he lives in a big house, we think, you know, he's a great person. So this judgmental mind is the one that is the problem, and that's the one we need to destroy. We do not need to destroy the functional mind. That's why you asked the question, can the mind be destroyed? The functional mind does not need to be destroyed. In fact, cannot be destroyed except at the time of death. But we have this second mind called the judgmental mind, which is a problem, which is, and that is one which all the time gets me agitated because, oh, I am so upset. Why? Because I don't have this or I didn't get that. And so anger, greed, jealousy, likes and dislikes, competition, all those things, you know, excessive hoarding, excessive procuring, you know, hurting others, you know, hatred, enmity, violence, all those are creations of the judgmental mind. You know, he doesn't belong to my religion, so I must kill him. So it is the judgmental mind that creates the problem, not the functional mind. So what happens is when you control your breath, when you sit down and control your breath, you breathe and then your mind goes into absorption. And that's very good. There's nothing wrong with that. And that helps in meditation. It helps even throughout the day. If you're having a very stressful day and you say, oh, I'm so stressed out. They say, just, you know, sit down, take a few deep breaths, calm down. And so you sit down in one corner and then you take a few deep breaths. And, you know, your mind gets quiet. Or you're very angry with somebody and say, oh, I'm so mad, I wish to punch him if I was here. They say, come on, take a deep breath. Don't we say people take a deep breath? So no matter how the mind is agitated, through breath you can quieten it, you can control it. And vice versa, if I'm angry at somebody, then what happens? My mind gets angry and my breath becomes fast. So the agitated mind leads to agitated breath. Quiet mind leads to quiet breathing. And similarly, rapid breathing, like when I'm running or when I'm exercising, then my mind is also active. But when you relax and sit down and take a few deep breaths, so the mind and the breath are connected. As we said, they are both connected by the same root. So it is helpful through control of the breath to get the mind in absorption. So that's why when you go into deep meditation, you know, if your mind is very quiet and it has become very still, then the mind becomes so quiet, so peaceful. And then when you wake up, that quietude stays with you for a while. If you have had a good meditation, then for a while, you not only that, but for sometimes for several hours. So that silence or that quietude that you experience in meditation stays with you. And the breath is very helpful in absorbing that. And so mind absorption is good, but as we said, just as an individual goes to sleep, right? And now before sleeping, I had a big problem. I had a major problem, say, I owed somebody money, you know, and I can't pay. So I wake up in the morning. I had a sleep, but I wake up in the morning, the problem is still there, right? I slept with the problem. I didn't have money. I couldn't pay. I wake up. Even though the mind was temporarily absorbed in sleep, not in meditation, but when it wakes up, the problem remains. Why? Because I have not solved the problem before I went to sleep. But say, before I go to sleep, I somehow arrange money. I have found that there is a way I can get money. So I pay that person off. then I have no problem. Once that problem is dead, and when I wake up in the morning, I don't have a problem. If the problem has not been solved, then obviously, so that is called the mind which is absorbed. But in this case, the problem was destroyed. I owed this person money, so the problem was destroyed. So when I wake up in the morning, I don't have a problem. So a mind which is absorbed, when it comes back, it continues with its problem. But the mind which is destroyed does not come back. The problems do not come back. So how do we destroy the mind? So through breath, you can absorb the mind. Through knowledge, you can destroy this judgmental mind. This judgmental mind cannot be destroyed by breath control. You cannot say, by doing yoga, I will remove my problems. By doing breathing, I will remove my problems. By doing service, I will remove my problem. They will all help. You know, they will help to quieten the mind. You do service, you do prayer, you go to the church and pray or the temple and pray. Temporarily, your mind becomes so peaceful and you come out of the Gurdwara or the Mandir or the church and your mind is so quiet, so peaceful. And then the moment you come out, somebody says something. So through service, through love, through breathing, through yoga, you can quieten the mind, you can absorb the mind. But to destroy this judgmental mind, you need knowledge. And the next few verses will talk about this knowledge. So briefly, the problem is, why is my judgmental mind a problem? Why is the judgmental mind a problem? Because I'm looking for joy in objects. I'm thinking that by getting this new car, I'll be happy, or this new house, or this new job, or this piece of jewelry, or this new friend, or by getting this new wife or new husband. So I feel that my current wife is not good, you know, but if I get a new one, the one, you know, neighbor, that's what happens. You know, the neighbor's wife is always, always better. So we are looking for happiness in objects. So they say, when you have knowledge and you find true happiness, where? Within. True happiness is found within. When you have discovered the Lord within, then you are truly happy. Then the whole world cannot affect you. Look at these saints. They were able to give up everything for the Lord. Look at Buddha. To find the truth, he gave up his wife, his newborn son, and he gave up his kingdom. He was prince. He was going to be king shortly. He gave everything up. He said, I want to find the truth. So why? Because as you remember Buddha's story, you know, right? He went with his charioteer. Does everybody know that story? When he was a young man, he went with his charioteer and he saw one person who was dying, dead, one person who was sick, one person who was old. And his charioteer said, sir, everybody gets old, everybody gets sick, and everybody dies. He said, there is no permanent happiness. He said, no, sir. So to find that permanent happiness, he said, I cannot find it in the world. I may even be the king of the kingdom. I may even have beautiful family, but ultimately I will become unhappy. So to find the true happiness within, he gave everything up. And that's what we find in these saints. Once they have discovered the source of happiness within, then they do not judge. Saints, that's why they have unconditional love for all. Even a person who is hurting them, they do not hate. Why? Because they say that everything is the Lord himself. They see the Lord in everybody, having discovered the Lord within. So that's what they're saying, that one has to destroy this judgmental mind so that when it does not come back, when you do not have any more judgments about others, you don't judge others, you don't criticize others, you accept people as they are, you love them unconditionally, then that can only happen when you find true happiness within, which we'll be talking in more detail in the next few verses as to what is this true happiness, what is the Lord, how do we reach him, and how do we find. So he has introduced this subject by saying that there are two minds, the functional mind we need, the judgmental mind we don't need. And so we should, through breathing and all, it helps to control and quieten, but ultimately knowledge is the only path. Knowledge is the best. All of these other things are good. I'm not saying that one shouldn't do service, one shouldn't do prayer or go to the temple or church, or one shouldn't do breathing, yoga. These are all very, very beneficial. And they are necessary. Without that, if your mind is agitated and disturbed and you sit down to read a book, the knowledge will not take place. So when your mind has been quietened, controlled with breath, with all these, with serving the Lord and so on, then with a quiet mind, when you sit and study, then only you can get the knowledge. That's why he has talked about the first three paths before, the path of service, the path of love, and the path of yoga, because they are preliminary and they are required. So having done those, then you can go on the path of knowledge. So if otherwise, if you sit down and try to meditate, who am I, unless you know who you are, your meditation will not be fruitful. So that is why we are doing this text, because it takes us within. And that is the beauty of this wonderful text, that it shows us the different paths and ultimately takes you. It's a stepwise progression from one step to the second to the third, and now to the path of knowledge, which is what we'll be doing in the next few weeks. Are there any questions or comments about any of these two verses?
I thought Maya was illusion.
Maya is also illusion. Maya has many meanings, but one of the meaning is illusion. Yes, Maya, that's very true. Maya also means illusion. What happens is that there's an illusive power. This whole universe is nothing but the Lord himself, right? The Lord himself expressing. But because of Maya's illusion, I don't see the Lord, and I see people, and I see trees, and I see her and her, and I like her and I dislike her. So it is through Maya which veils the truth, and then I project on that. And I project, because I don't see her as the Lord and her as the Lord. So one is my friend, one is my enemy. So the Maya veils the truth and then it projects. So Maya has two aspects. One is the illusory power, and the other one is the projecting power, like the rope and the snake. You know, everybody knows the example of the rope and the snake. But I'm walking on a dark street and I see a piece of rope on the ground, but it's kind of dark, semi-dark. So I project a snake upon it. I don't see the rope as a rope, and I project a snake. So now I think there is a snake, so then I get scared. Oh, I'm allergic to snakes. If the snake bites me, I will die. So some people even, you know, become unconscious because of fear, or they accidentally touch that with the foot and they think they were bitten. So not seeing the rope as a rope, I project a snake, and then I get fear. So similarly, not seeing the world as Lord because of Maya, I project ignorance and my enemies and friends. And then I have likes and dislikes and all that. So that is Maya. Maya has two aspects. One is veiling or covering, and the other one is projecting. And so Maya has many meanings, but that's a good point. Thank you. Anything else?
So the animals have probably just only functional mind.
Yes.
And they don't have judgmental mind.
No.
So that's why their karma, when they're killing, it's not karma with the fruits attached.
Yes.
But the karmas that we do with our judgmental mind,
right,
has the fruits attached, good or bad.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Yeah, animals just function. Yeah, they don't decide or judge. A lion doesn't say, you know, it's bad to kill a deer. From tomorrow, I'm going to become a vegetarian lion and only eat fruits. You know, he's not going to do that, because he doesn't have the judging capacity that you and I do.
But they do have the ability, it seems, to judge danger.
Yeah, yeah. But that is again because of their instinct. It's an instinct. But yeah, like in the advanced animals, they do have some, like dogs. They can love, you know, dogs, you know, dolphins. So they have some ability to think. So in the advanced, like monkeys, chimpanzees, you know, they have the ability, they can count, they can, you know, they've trained them to separate red and blue and all. So yeah, they have a very rudimentary ability to think. Mostly it is, they function on instinct, because it's instinctively built in them. The moment the deer hears the lion roaring, he starts running. It's not he's judging that. He's just instinct. He knows that there is danger.